Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the very first Italian-American podcast and the home of your Italian-American moment. I'm your very proud host, Frankie D, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and connect with us on LinkedIn, and check out our new YouTube channel with all our Italian-American moments. My guest today is Lawrence Baldassaro, Professor Emeritus of Italian and former Director of the Honors College at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and the author of an excellent book called Tony Lazzari, Yankees Legend and Baseball Pioneer. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And it really was an excellent book and an excellent topic. And before we get into that, I want you to tell us a little bit about your story about when you were a younger man going to Italy and the effect it had on you.
Well, you know, all four of my grandparents were Italian immigrants. And I grew up in an Italian-American household. My mother was born in Italy. She came over when she was four with my grandmother. My grandfather was already here. My dad was born in the States, but his parents were both Italian immigrants.
So, what part of Italy was the family from?
Well, my father's family is from the province of Avellino, east of Naples. And my mother's family is Abruzzese, a little bit inland from Pescara on the Adriatic coast.
Okay, very nice.
So, I lived that Italian life in the home. My mother and grandmother spoke Italian, or at least the Abruzzese dialect, to each other. And my grandmother would speak it to me. I understood what she was saying, but I always answered her in English. And it wasn't that I was embarrassed or anything. It was just at that time, and, you know, growing up in the late 40s and the 50s, it wasn't yet chic to be ethnic. But, I mean, I lived in a multicultural world because our neighbors were either parents or grandparents almost exclusively had come from other countries, Polish, French Canadians, Irish. But so outside the home, in the playground, at school, you were living an American lifestyle. You know, the textbooks and what you learned in school was all American. So, but it wasn't until between my junior and senior years in college that I first went to Italy.
I went there for two reasons.
One, to study some Italian, to finally try to learn to speak Italian, but also to visit my mother's family in Abruzzo because one of her cousins lived in Rome. So I got to, when I first saw Venice, Florence, and then Rome before I got over to meet the family. So you could say I fell in love with Italy just from visiting those cities, getting to see the art, the architecture, the culture. And I, believe it or not, I felt at home, even though I'd never been there, didn't speak the language, almost nothing. So that was a surprise, a pleasant surprise. But then one Friday evening, my mother's cousin and his wife drove me from Rome over to Abruzzo. And my mother was born in this farm compound. We got there, maybe 9:30 Friday night, and most of the people were already in bed. We went into the house of my cousin's father, and then people started drifting in. I think they heard that I was there, and they came in, and of course, they're all embracing me. I know they're relatives, but... And then this one man walks in, this tall man with white hair. And the only English I heard that day, he embraced me and said, "You, my friend." This turned out to be my mother's Zio Cesare, my grandfather's brother, who had actually lived in my childhood home in Western Massachusetts way back in the 1920s. He had gone back to Italy. So my point is, these people only knew that I was my mother's son. And I ended up spending days there, and I went back several times. I was actually sleeping in the same room where my mother was born. And there were about five nuclear families in this compound, all related. And I was just overwhelmed by this reception I got from these people who were obviously, I was a stranger to them, but that didn't matter. I was my mother's son. So between the cultural impact of visiting those other cities, and more importantly, really, you know, it's a cliche, but discovering my roots, I was hooked. And then it ended up that, you know, I had planned to go on and I was an English major in college. There was no Italian I could study there. When I got to graduate school, I switched and became a PhD student in Italian. That's how much I had fallen in love with the culture.
That's I just love that story. That's a great story. And it just furthers my beliefs that the quickest way to a ethnic culture shock for our young Italian Americans is a trip to Italy.
Oh, absolutely.
There is no doubt in my mind. And as a, you know, as a community, a Italian American community, we're here in Chicago, but I'm going to say every Italian American community there is in the United States, I really think we have to get towards that that thought process that if we really want to help and affect our young people in an ethnic way, we have to look into organizing trips to Italy and maybe not so much, you know.
Let me just say this. I spent 36 years as a professor of Italian here at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I did nothing more important in those years was to send several of my students to study abroad for a year at the University of Bologna.
And that is that
and
is
that like, changed many of their lives.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm a firm believer and hopefully can be a actual doer in some capacity that I believe we should have trips organized, you know, in the summers, not just college students, just trips for younger Italian Americans for an opportunity to go to Italy, because I think that's going to make the difference. That's going to be the payback in the future leaders of the Italian American community. We're investing in them, and not everyone's going to, you know, go there and just fall in love like you did, like I did, because I kind of have a similar story to you as well. But I think that the percentages, it will affect, and I think it's some people like you and me, it will affect in a big way. So
definitely.
Yes. But hopefully someday we can do that in, you know, not too distant future. But your book, and you've written many books, but I'm going to tell you, this was an important one. Now, from my point of view, you wrote a book about Tony Lazzeri. So as an Italian American, I'm 54 years old. I had heard the name. I had not a clue who he was, where he played, what he did. I just knew the famous Italian American ball players. So Tony Lazzeri, that was it. I read your book, Yankees Legend, Baseball Pioneer, and it just was, I think it was just excellent, awesome. Thank God you wrote it, because first of all, this man played about 100 years ago.
That's right.
I mean, he literally played a century ago, and we're talking about him. And if you didn't write this book, we're not talking about him, and I probably never learned who he is. And he's someone to be known, because I think you might have mentioned in the book, this was kind of Joe DiMaggio before Joe DiMaggio.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about how you came to write this book about Tony Lazzeri.
Well, I mean, based on what you said, that, you know, you hadn't heard of him. I've been in love with baseball as long as I can remember. I played quite a bit when I was younger. I'm not a Yankees fan. I grew up in Western Massachusetts. So like my parents, I was a Red Sox fan. Even though the Yankees had all those Italians when I was a kid, DiMaggio, Barra, Rizzuto. But as a Red Sox fan, you had to hate them. So I knew very little about Tony Lazzeri until I started doing research for my previous book, which was a general history of Italian Americans in baseball called Beyond DiMaggio. And, you know, that's a 500 plus page book. And all the figures that I researched, that I interviewed, studied, wrote about, none of them, not even Joe DiMaggio, had a bigger impact on me than the story of Tony Lazzeri, because I had no idea what an important figure he was, not just as a great ball player who ended up in the Hall of Fame, but more importantly, from my point of view, for his social impact as the first great player of Italian descent in Major League Baseball, which when he was playing was not only the undisputed American pastime, it was by far the most important sport, but it was also an important social institution, because that's how many immigrants learned, especially the children, learned what it meant to be American by playing and learning about baseball. It had that big of an impact. So I figured, I couldn't believe how forgotten this person had become, because in his day, he was praised as one of the greatest players of his era, playing with the great Yankees teams, murderers row lineup. He was a key figure in the winning five World Series between 1926 and 37 when he was with the Yankees. And, you know, those teams featured Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and the later Joe DiMaggio. These are iconic figures. So as great as Lazzeri was, in time, he was overshadowed by the records of Ruth, Gehrig, and DiMaggio, even though when he played in that era, he was acknowledged as one, not only one of the best players of that time, but also as having one of the brightest baseball minds. And he was one of the most popular. Among the Yankees, those great Yankees, only Babe Ruth was more popular with the fans than Tony Lazzeri. So he had such a great impact. He was such an important figure. I just felt that his story had to be told.
And the fact that now, okay, so I, like I said, I'm 54, big sports fan, you know, grew up in a household, big sports fan. And I always understood that the 1927 Yankees was kind of like considered the greatest team of all time. Okay. Yes. I mean, you can't, you know, it's not like it's just a judgment call, but people always said that. And then I learned that, wow, Tony Lazzeri was on the team, the 1927 Yankees. That's very
well. Not only what he was he on the team, and this is Tony Lazzeri's life is full of surprises, and none to me greater surprise than this, that even as a 22-year-old rookie in 1926, he was acknowledged as the on-field leader of that team, not Babe Ruth, not Lou Gehrig, Tony Lazzeri. And what makes that even more amazing, you know, at that time, there were no long-term contracts. Players had contracts year to year, no guarantee. So here's this 22-year-old kid coming into spring training, and rookies were not welcome with open arms. They were often shunned. They wouldn't let them take batting practice. And yet, there was clearly something about Lazzeri that endeared him to his teammates, even as a rookie. Paul Gallico, who was one of the most important sports writers of the 20s, said that there was a warmth about Tony Lazzeri that was appealing and endearing. And he was respected, he was liked among his teammates, even the veterans. And as I say, he was acknowledged as the on-field de facto captain of that team, which he remained through his whole time with the Yankees.
Do you think that, I know he died at a young age. I believe it was like 46 years old.
Yeah.
You think that that contributed to maybe his legacy kind of dying out maybe quicker than it should have?
Of course. Think about it. He's been out of the public consciousness for over 7 decades.
And then perhaps as well, Joe DiMaggio came on the scene, and Joe DiMaggio was like bigger than life. Yes. So, you know, that might have added to it as well. But thus, like I said, the reason that it was so important for you to write a book like this, because I think you're going to keep his legacy alive, especially with Italian Americans. I mean, definitely someone like myself that really, really enjoyed learning about him. Tell us some of his more outstanding statistics, because I know he did have some that were incredible.
Well, there's another surprise. Lazzeri was a second baseman. And in that era, infield, middle infield, the shortstop, second baseman didn't hit with power. They were average hitters. They were more defensive players. Lazzeri was one of the first middle infielders in Major League history to hit with power. And in those years he played with the Yankees, he was one of the elite sluggers of that era. In those years, only six American leaguers hit more home runs than Tony Lazzeri, and only five drove in more runs. The other thing that's amazing that, you know, now in his rookie year, he hit 18 home runs. Now that doesn't sound like much today, but in 1926, that was good for third place in the American League. Babe Ruth hit, I think, 47, and Al Simmons hit 19, and Lazzeri's third with 18. And he was second in the league in runs batted in behind only Babe Ruth. So he got off to a great start, hitting with power, driving in runs, but that was just the start. And from there, the next several years, he got better and better. And here's another thing. Tony was weighed about 165 pounds. You know, Gary weighed about 200. The Babe, 215 at least in his prime. And they were left-handed hitters. Yankee Stadium, right field fence, right center field, generally was about 346 feet. Whereas to left field, Tony Lazzeri is a right-handed hitter, so he's hitting to left field. That was over 400 feet. So the fact that he hit all those home runs to left center, whatever, just, again, is amazing that he could do that. You know, he left school at the age of 15 and went to work in an ironworks factory where his father worked. And he always attributed the strength he got in that job in his wrists and forearms that enabled him to hit those long home runs when he became a professional ball player.
And he had one minor league season, correct, that he was record-setting with the home runs?
Absolutely. It was his fourth season. He struggled off and on in his first two, three seasons. But then in 1925, with the Salt Lake City Bees and the Pacific Coast League, he became the first player in organized baseball to hit 60 home runs. Now, they played a lot of games in the Pacific Coast League. He played in 197 games that season. Yet, nobody before or since has ever come close to that in the Pacific Coast League. He still holds the record. And that was, you know, before Babe Ruth got to 60 home runs in 1927. So, you know, he was outstanding that year. In the major leagues, just to give you one single greatest achievement, one day, May 24th, 1936, he became the first major leaguer to hit two grand slams in one game. He hit another home run, a triple, and he drove in 11 runs, which is still the American League record for most RBIs in a single game. Set some records that neither Ruth nor Gary could match.
And you're saying that's the record to this day?
Yes.
Wow, absolutely. That's incredible. And he did all this with epilepsy, correct?
There's the other big surprise. The fans didn't know this. I mean, you know, epilepsy at that time was very stigmatized. People didn't understand it. They thought maybe these people were demonized. So it was best to keep it a secret. And the Yankees and the media, when he was in New York, never revealed that to the public. That was his big secret. And to be able to play Major League Baseball and facing the daily challenge of living with epilepsy when you never know when you might have a seizure, it's incredible. There was a woman who was the head of the epilepsy center in New York City, and she was quoted in the New York Times in 1991 saying, you know, knowing that stress can be a trigger for a seizure, says, I can't believe he played baseball in front of all those people at that time. She just said, it's unbelievable.
And the fact that
he was one of the best players
right.
of his era.
And he was in multiple World Series.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he really was under stress, that's for sure. From the book, it just seemed like he was a genuinely, a really good guy. And I love the fact that he accepted, he was honored by Italian-American communities all over the country.
Yes.
And he accepted the honors and you know, it just, that was very nice. I enjoyed that part of it. I like that.
Well, that certainly wasn't anything he sought, because he was very private, he was very quiet, very modest. And in spite of that, again, he was a fan favorite, not just because he was a great player, but he had that leadership ability on the field. He ran the team on the field. All the players looked to him when there was a problem in the game, not to Babe Ruth. So all those factors that made him so exceptional in his time. And here's the thing, put it in historical perspective. He's a rookie in 1926. 2 years before that, there was such anti-immigration fervor in the United States, primarily against Italians, because they were the biggest immigrant group coming to America at that time. But the anti-immigrant fervor was so great, Congress passed a law in 1924 that severely limited the number of immigrants who could come here from Southern and Eastern European countries. Again, principally Italy. 2 years, and you know, Italians, since they came in the 1880s, had been stereotyped in very negative ways in the press. You know, the mafia thing was there. They were hot-headed, hot-blooded, et cetera. You know, we know the stereotypes. And Lazzeri comes in the midst of this in 1926. And finally, he gives these immigrants and their children a hero, somebody that countless Americans are cheering for as an American baseball hero. And now these people, these immigrants particularly, who for the very majority of them didn't care much about base. They were too busy working to keep their family going. And the most of them thought it was a child's game, a waste of time. And all of a sudden, there's this young man from San Francisco being idolized by assimilated Americans, and he becomes their hero. They have these banquets for him. They have days at the ballpark. And perhaps more importantly, he brought them into the ballpark. He created an entirely new fan base. Now these immigrants and their children are coming, waving the Italian flag, not just in Yankee Stadium, but in all the ballparks in the American League where the Yankees played. They had banquets for him in New York, Boston, and Detroit. In New York, they had more than 1,000 people at this banquet. I mean, he suddenly, here's a very quick anecdote about how he'd become admired by the public in general. In 1928, Lucky Strike Cigarettes initiated the first major campaign for cigarette sales. They chose as one of their campaigns five major league ball players to represent Lucky Strikes. Tony Lazzeri, an Italian kid, 24 years old, was one of those five. So now his ads are appearing in magazines, they're appearing in buses and trams. He was on the back page of Life magazine in 1948, full page ad, Tony Lazzeri. I mean, that gives you some measure of how assimilated he had become, how accepted he had become. Again, in that historical context, when Italians weren't particularly welcomed with open arms.
Yeah, he definitely made a major impact. I was curious about one thing from the book. He had a half-brother, is that correct?
Yes, his mother had been married before and had a child before he married Tony's father. And very little is known about the stepbrother. He lived in the home with them. If you look at the census, he's recorded there in the census beginning in 1920, the first time you see them in the census. But very little is known about him.
Okay, I was just very curious because I read from the book about how his mother had a child and then she had Tony later, and I wonder if there was any, you know, any specific relation or anything that had happened in that regards. One thing in the book I love too, the photographs you have in there, mm-hmm. and particularly the World Series with the five Italians.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which year that was. It was in the 30s, I believe.
Yes.
That is just an awesome picture to think that there's a World Series going on. There's two teams. I'm assuming in those days, what is it, roughly 25 players per team?
Yeah.
Okay, so 50 players and five of them, which if my math serves me is 10%, were Italian-Americans.
That's right. And well, you know, in 1936, when DiMaggio joined the Yankees, Frankie Crosetti, all three of these guys were San Francisco natives. So Crosetti becomes a shortstop in 1932, so now they got the Italian double play combination. And then 36, the center fielder comes along, Joe D. That's the first time you had three Italian-Americans in the starting lineup of a major league team. Two of them are in the Hall of Fame, Lazeri and DiMaggio, obviously.
No, that's incredible. That's incredible. But like I said, thank you for writing this book. I think it's very important that Italian-Americans will know who Tony Lazeri is, because he should be known. He had such an impact. He deserves it. And I really much enjoyed the book. The book is called, once again, Tony Lazeri, Yankees Legend and Baseball Pioneer. I highly advise it to all the Italian-Americans and especially the sports fans. Larry, thank you so much for the time. I very much appreciate it.
My pleasure, Frank. Thank you for inviting me. It's
thank
a lot
you.
Of fun.
Excellent book. And if you got any more tricks in your hat, please write about them. People that we don't know. All right?
So.
All right. Well, thank you, Larry. And to all,
thanks.
Have a great day.